5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the new Panic Room. It's the show other shows want to be, and the show that authors want to be on. The all-new Panic Room radio show is brought to you by HellboundBooks.com.
Well, 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 good evening and all. It's been a while. We've not been around for a bit, but here we are, back and in full effect. So, I'm glad November's done. It was a god-awful month, I think, for both me and Christina. But, let's bring her on. Let her have a good old moan about it all by herself. I'm just the most miserable patient ever, and I had the nasty cold you had. I nursed my daughter through it, but I dodged it, and then obviously didn't. So I had that, which I was coming out of the cold, but oh shit, you're on my sinus is going, you know, that pain you get in the front of your face. I'm gonna have a fucking sinus infection. Great. Turned out it was a broken tooth. And, you know, I know.
Oh.
Exactly. And it's one of those things, at the time, great idea. Because I was doing my grocery shopping, and they have sort of rack of baked goods and that sort of thing that just about to hit their sell by. And I always go, because I tend to free stuff like that, so I'll buy it. I've got about 30 Italian-style flatbreads. I forget, because I don't normally buy them. Oh, that'd be nice. We soup that. No. And I've got a freezer full of this fucking thing. It's like, I actually have to put a note, I can show you this on my phone, and I have to put a note, do not buy Italian style flatbread. Seriously. I have a list, a sub-list of what not to buy. I've done it before. I've done it. I tinned tomatoes, sorry, tomatoes. And I went through, every time we come in, we need tomatoes. I had about 13 tins of those fucking things. So it's like, and the kids say, do we need all these? No, not really. So, yeah, and I spotted the French baguette that you could warm, heat up in the oven, and I used to love those. Of course, it's very crusty, very crispy, and it was not the freshest. And I just munched on it. I remember munching on it, and I'm pretty sure that's what brought it to. It must have been weak to start with. But, deal with, and then I had that pulled out. I mean, Ava was the pain of fucking paying for it. You know, they put you through all this agony and then expect you to pay for it. What am I, some of the masochists? And to make things a million times worse all through, having my tooth ripped out, they were playing Christmas music. It was the middle of bloody November. Christmas, what? But turn that off and just don't. And I left with Jingle Bell Rock running through my head. I don't need that. Not even that. Please don't do that. Miserable month. It's been awful. And obviously, I think we make the right call not doing the show, because I think nobody wants snuffling and moaning and whining and what have you. I missed it. I have to say, I have missed it.
Yes. It's been a couple of really rough months. I was sick pretty much all of October, and I still...
Yeah, you were.
It's December now. It's December now, and I think my voice is still kind of rough. I feel like Phoebe with her sexy phlegm thingy, going on, because and I'm wondering,
a little bit of a sultry rasp to your voice. I have a semi on right now, listening to it. I can't help it. It's just happened.
Different than my normal cheeriness.
It doesn't happen often for me. Obviously, at my age, I make the most of it, But sadly, we have the show to do instead. So, Yes.
I am so jolly. I'm so jolly right now. I cannot even contain myself, and I've tried. Like I had the.
Oh yeah, you put your fucking decorations up.
A lot of them.
You monster. You monster.
Well, it's December 1st. I feel like I'm already, behind, because, all of my neighbors already went out and they already have decorations up. And I'm like, I've been robbed a whole week. So I kind of have to make up for it now. And I got out my buckets, and the house just looks like it regurgitated Christmas all over the place. And I still have buckets that I haven't even opened up yet. And I'm like, I don't know where I'm going to put these stuff. I don't know. I had this weird thing where I have to. So, I don't know.
It is. You are ill. I'm sorry. The day after Thanksgiving, Friday, I popped out, my grocery shopping for nothing, and not buy, again, on that list is don't buy French baguettes, don't buy Italian stuff, flatbread. obviously, and I'm driving, people with Christmas, they've got the Christmas tree. And I think it's kind of a thing the day after It's still November, you fucking idiot. The kids are actually right. We're picking our tree up on the 17th. So that's the date we're getting our tree.
Oh, gosh.
A minute before.
Oh.
And we're, well, to
you
the
know,
point, when I was a kid, the tree went up. You know, when we broke up in England, we had 2 weeks Christmas holiday. The day we broke, yeah, we break up, and that the first that weekend, that's when the tree was. It was like a week, and that was it. Not, you know, in sort of July. I mean, it's just ridiculous. How do they live?
You know, all I have to say,
by Christmas Day, it's just going to be a dryness for sure.
You know, all I have to say is you are lucky you have not received your Christmas card yet, okay? Because it is in the mail.
Oh, God.
I love this time of year. I'm already listening to Christmas. Well, I'm already torturing everybody with Christmas music. And
No.
If I could sprinkle myself
you are
with glitter, I would do it. Yes. It's the most wonderful time
of the
year.
You start too early, and by the time it actually is happening, you're just sick of it. I mean,
No. Wow. I get sad when I start putting my stuff. But everybody else is excited, you know, to have the house back to normal and stuff.
I can't wait to get everything down, and I kind of leave it till after New Year's, you know?
And like,
then it's down.
It.
Christmas is mm-hmm. We actually chop. Obviously, we know we have our fire pit, which is, you know, chop it up and burn it because it's trying to go up really well. By gum, those things burn. You know, it's like, tinder.
I think we wait until, like, I Googled it 1 year, and a tradition says you have to wait till the 6th. And the 6th of January, and that's what we do. And usually I try to drag it out a couple more days, but the husband, I can no longer say the boyfriend.
Of course,
husband, he just definitely, he wants it down. I mean, he would wait until the 20-something.
day after New Year's Day. Right, goodbye. It's just a bloody thing in my house. Right, bye then. I'm tired of it. I'm just bloody knees everywhere. And I mean, you have a fake tree, but we always have a real one. So needles.
All over the place.
I just want my house back to normal. I'm just, you know, and I think I'm a miserable little bastard. I'm fed up with it. The kids are not little anymore. And I obviously have not taken my childlike wonder of Christmas that you have. And for me, it's just expense. Not really working and to be jolly and shit music and crap on the telly. And on that jolly note, on that cheery note, what are we going to be showing?
We have an awesome show tonight, and it's not just because we haven't been here in so long, and we just are excited to have any guests. It's going to be a great show. I'm going to introduce our first guest, and you're going to try to find that button, and we're going to be all excited.
I'll do my best.
Our first guest is horror writer Ezekiel Kincaid. Woo!
Hello.
Hey, James.
Hello. I thought you'd run away. Most people do by this point.
After everything we've been through to finally connect, I'm not going anywhere.
Yes.
You're going to have to hang up on me.
Good. Oh, no, that's fine. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you. It's an absolute pleasure.
Don't tempt James. He used to mute me when I would talk about baseball. And the bad thing is, I wouldn't even know at first, and I'd just be talking away, and, you know, nobody could hear me. And I was like, And then I would have to, I message him. I'm like, did you mute me? And yeah, he did. He's like, I did warn you though.
I warned her, and she carried on. I just muted her because I seriously, nothing bores me more.
I get excited. I can't help it. I just get excited. I have a childlike excitement for all sorts of things, and the baseball and Christmas are a couple of them. So, but I'm also excited about horror, and so we have Ezekiel Kincaid with us who writes horror. So, yay! You were going to talk to us about your book, Dreadful Death Series. It's book two. Tell us a little bit about it.
So this is a three-book series that is put out by Raventail Publishing. And the series is, if I could describe it in, like, movie terms, it would be a mix of The Exorcist, Carrie, and Pan's Labyrinth.
Wow.
It is a possession.
There you go.
Story. Yeah, it's a possession story. The main character, the young girl, also has some psychic abilities, and she opens herself up to this world where there are all kinds of creatures and demons, and some of these guardian demons are protecting her so that she can fulfill her destiny of meeting this dark entity. In the book, he's called the Tetramet, and it is a historical horror. It takes place in the early 1800s in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, and it is about this young girl's, it tracks her life, and it's this young girl's descent into darkness and madness until the evil finally takes full hold of her, and she begins to unleash her demonic terror upon her family, upon her town, upon her friends and loved ones. The biggest comment that I've gotten about this series so far is because of the characters in the way that they're presented, and because of the dialogue and because of the real visceral imagery, people have described it as a cinematic experience in book form. So,
that's good.
Really, really appreciate that compliment that people have been giving on this book. So the first book kind of sets the stage. You see young Theo, you see her family, and she comes from a very religious family. Her father is a professor of ancient documents and religions at UNC. They're a very good church-going Methodist family. So what I like about horror is that you can take things that are supposed to be safe and then absolutely violate them. And that's what happened. She is supposedly in this safe environment. And what we find out is as the story goes on, it is not safe. There are these dark entities pursuing her, and she is being caught in this spiral of darkness. And the second book that is out now, it really picks up where kind of the descent of young Theodosia goes into overdrive, and her demon guardian named Hophni is starting to seek out her friends to kind of bring them into her Tetramet cult that she is forming for this entity. So, you know, fans of occult and cult horror, there's something in there for them as well. And so it kind of takes all of the elements of a historical horror, occult, possession, creature, otherworldly things, and wraps him up into this nice, neat, terrifying package. And book two has one of my, The Gathering has one of my absolute favorite scenes in the whole series, when Theodosia actually becomes fully possessed by her darkness for the first time and unleashes upon her mother. And what's great about the name Theodosia is it means in the Greek a gift from God. And in this book, this little girl is anything but that to those nice. Around her.
Mm.
So
it seems like it has
kind of
a little bit of everything in this book. And yeah, when you get ready to make out that signed copy, that's X-T-I-N-A.
I got it.
Awesome.
Got
awesome.
It.
So
I will
you
definitely
said, you know,
one of each, one of The Dawning and of The Gathering.
Awesome. Yeah, you said, you know, Carrie and The Exorcist, and who doesn't love Carrie? But and The Exorcist scared the crap
mm-hmm.
out of me, I have to say. I looked you up on Amazon, and I could not help but read they call you the pastor of horror. You have to
yes.
explain. You have to explain
yes.
that.
So I go by the pastor of horror or the paranormal pastor.
Nice.
People have called me both because I was a pastor for 20 years.
Wow.
And I also serve as a chaplain now.
Wow.
And so it was kind of a as soon as I started writing horror in about 2018 or so and started getting stuff published, it was like just a total upheaval. Like people are like, Zeke has lost his mind. We always knew he was a little bit crazy, but he is gone off the deep end. So I got a lot of hate and a lot of flack for what in transitioning and writing horror. And it's not that I left my faith behind. I never have. That's still very important to me.
Mm-hmm.
I just saw a huge connection with
mm-hmm.
my faith in horror. And I just was like, well, you know, I'm a huge horror fan. I always have been all my life. And I've always loved writing in the past, just mainly writing theological and philosophical things. But I was like, you know what? I'm going to see if I can write horror fiction and see if I can be any good at it. And it really happened overnight. The first kind of little novelette that I wrote was a werewolf story called the Memoirs of Darius Fisher, and it's on Amazon, and it got picked up. So the very first thing that I ever tried to write ended up getting picked up by Grinning Skull Press, and I was kind of shocked because I wasn't expecting to do good at it. and I was like, wow, you know, maybe I can do this. And that just kind of set off a snowball effect, and I have just been balls to the wall, just hammering and writing horror, and I absolutely love it. Being able
you
to
know,
write
you
now.
You missed a really interesting discussion that we had. I think it was over the summer, James, when we had the guests on that were all Christian horror authors.
Oh, the Christian
and
horror.
Was,
that was absolutely.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, and
yeah.
I have to say, Ezekiel, for I grew up Southern Baptist, and you know, what is that saying? You can take the girl out of the Southern Baptist, but you can't take the Southern Baptist out of the girl or something, you know,
yeah.
Because that is, you know, the genres that, you know, that this book is with the, you know, the possession, and that just terrifies me. It, you know, and I think that it scares us more as, you know, when you put religion in it as well, than people who are non-believers. You know, I think that they can read a possession story and just be like, yeah, it's, you know, it's good or whatever, but they're not terrified. And they can terrify me. They really can. And so, yeah, I am really excited. I want to read this now. but you have an excerpt for us. Do you would you like to read it?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Awesome.
Just give you a little background of this scene so that what I read will give you some context. Theodosia is about 12 years old right now, and they're in their home, and their mother is doing some spring cleaning, and she pulls some furniture away from Theodosia's wall, and she sees this really vile mural that Theodosia has drawn on the wall of her family and her guardian demon, Hophni. And so Sarah, her mother, is absolutely appalled. And so they begin having a discussion, and Sarah's getting on to her and freaking out, like, what is this? And this is when the darkness just totally takes over Theodosia fully for the first time. And so if The Exorcist made you squeamish, this scene is absolutely going to terrify you and make you very uncomfortable.
Oh,
if I can't sleep tonight, you're in trouble.
I know that squeamish, it was terrifying the living daylights out of us. So, Carol, go. I'm looking forward to this.
All right, here we go. Theodosia slapped her fingers away with a pop. Sarah winced and dropped her hands by her side. Nuh-uh, bitch. Not until I show you my trick. An unadulterated rush of pleasure cavorted through Theodosia's body, and she started to perspire. Her red hair was now stuck to her cheeks and forehead. She sat, squatting over Sarah, swaying back and forth. Her eyes narrowed, and she bared her teeth. Before I show you my trick, I would like to ask you a question, Mother. Sarah blinked, wheezed, and nodded. Good, Theodosia said. Do you like sex, Mother? Theodosia sucked on her fingers and slid them up her leg. Sarah's entire body flinched at the gesture. Do you like it when Father sticks it in you? Theodosia, still squatting, thrust her hips forward. Are you an uptight quim who only does the deed to procreate? Theodosia saw something in Mother's eyes. It was a mixture of anger and fear, the universal reaction to truth. Theodosia threw her head back and gave a maddening cackle. You are. You are an uptight old quim. Father getting his sticks from. Do you know? I venture he runs to the harlots. Theodosia held up a finger. Better yet, she sucked on her finger like a woman who knew how to pleasure a man. I venture he's given it to Charlotte Edwards. Have you seen her breasts, Mother? Theodosia held her hands away from her chest and moved them in circles. They're nice and plump. She wiggled her fingers. And she's a blonde. She sat down on Sarah and placed her palms flush against the door. You know, Pastor Edwards is probably just as uptight as you are. I bet Charlotte and Father have a spot in the woods where she can moan and howl and no one will hear their orgasms. What do you think, Mother? Theodosia flickered her tongue and ground on her mother. The dripping tears turned to sobs, and Sarah turned her face away. Stop, Theo. Hush. Sarah's voice shook with her body, and she could feel Theodosia's wet womanhood on her abdomen. Is that all you know how to say, you cowardly bitch? Theodosia ground again. Sarah slammed the back of her head against the door. Please, Theo, stop. She banged her head again, this time rattling her teeth. You know what, Mother? I venture I would love sex. Theodosia played with the buttons on Mother's dress. In fact, I know I would. I think I want to be a harlot, Mother, a harlot that makes the whore of Babylon in the Book of Revelation look like a nun. Theodosia leaned forward and licked Sarah's chest. She sat up and wagged her tongue like a dog in heat. How would that make you feel? Would you be proud of me? Theodosia leaned in again, tongue still hanging out of her mouth. She licked the tears off the side of Sarah's face in one big pass. Weeping flowed from Sarah in putrid chops. She wished it were a dream. She wished to God she was asleep. She and Charles had done their damnedest to raise their children right. They took them to church, practiced catechisms, and shielded them from worldliness and evil. Where was Theodosia hearing these things? What Sarah didn't know, what she was ignorant of, was this. When in the wisdom and sovereignty of God, He let evil have a person. There was no amount of catechism, no amount of protection, and no amount of praying that would change what had been predestined before the foundation of the world. In her ignorance, Sarah continued to beg. No, Theo, no, my precious baby, what is wrong with you? What is wrong with you? Sarah placed her hands on Theodosia's cheeks and pressed her forehead against hers. My precious child, I love you. Why? Why, my pure, sweet soul, what has happened to you? Sarah's eyes were closed, and the sobs broke up the words. Theodosia gripped her hands on either side of Sarah's head. Sarah could feel Theodosia's warm breath settling on and off her lips like a dense fog. It smelled of metal and dung. Sarah's skin grew clammy, and the cold sweat of her forehead beaded against Theo's. All the moisture left Sarah's mouth, and her tongue was like a rock of salt. Theodosia peered into Sarah's eyes. Sarah gazed back at Theodosia. Theodosia saw in her mother a soul raped by terror, held motionless by the shackles of fear. The words Theodosia spoke next would do much more than shock Sarah. They would cripple her heart and shatter the fortitude of her mind. Pure soul? Pure soul, mother? Theodosia growled in a gravel-laden voice for several seconds and ground again on Sarah. My soul has been being fucked by the darkness since I was 7, and I'm about to give birth.
Wow. Wow. That was, I have chills, and it's really, it's gotten really cold in here, so I'm hoping it's because of the ceiling fan and nothing more.
No, I was picturing that I was there. That was brilliant. I'm actually read as well. Very well read. But yeah, that was powerful stuff. Powerful stuff. So, sadly, I'm going to have to buy my own copy because XG has already backed the soft copy. That's okay.
I have to say, you know, being that I was brought up in church and Southern Baptist, I cannot imagine the pastor of the church I used to go to writing something like that. So I can totally understand the flack you have gotten. I mean, is that one of the reasons that you write? You know what? I'm going to rephrase the question. Do you write under a pen name? I mean,
I just write under a pen name simply because I did not think my birth name was actually sounded like a good horror writer name. So, Ezekiel is my favorite prophet in the Bible because when you look at Ezekiel, he does a lot of outlandish things that are kind of go against the grain in the religion of the day. And I kind of knew that's what I was doing because I was a Southern Baptist pastor. So that's the denomination that I came out of. And I always like to say that I am obviously, when you read this, this is not Christian horror. This is the real deal. I am a Christian who writes horror. Like, I don't shy away from the reality of things. I don't try to edit things down for content. I write things that are raw and real to human emotion, how people will react into things. I'm presenting evil in this book. Evil is not going to say, oh, darn, oh, foo. A lot of what I write about in the supernatural is based on some real experiences too. I've done some exorcisms in my past.
Wow.
And
cool.
You know, have seen seen the sexuality part come out at times, and so it's not just something that is in the movies. It's something that can be a real phenomenon when this sort of thing is taking place. And
you know, it's.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Christina.
It's interesting when, you know, like James, he would if he saw a ghost, he would just absolutely go nuts. He would love it. He would just have a lot of horror authors come on the show and we talk about this and they're like psyched about it. And I'm like, man, I'm going the opposite way. You know, I'm, and I think that is, you know, coming from the position of a believer, you know, we're like, nope, that's not for me. I'm going to, you know, so in the same vein, is there anything that you won't write because of your beliefs? Anything that you is like too blasphemous for you, you know?
No. There's
really?
Not, that's a censorship button, like, because when I read scripture, it's very raw. It doesn't shy away from things. It doesn't shy away from presenting some very nasty things that people do to each other. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was kind of the flack that I got when I first started writing. And I was like, because I got flack for some of the violence, and I was like,
Have you read the Bible? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Bible, they is inspired, the book of Judges. You ever read that one? So I kind of see myself as doing, because I get questions all the time about it. I don't see myself that I'm doing anything outside of, in a sense, what the biblical writers did. I mean, they recorded some wicked things that people did, and as a writer, especially if I am wanting to give people a real experience when they read, like, mm-hmm. when I write, I want to suck people into this world that I'm creating to where it almost feels real to them. And that's what I appreciate about the people saying it's like a cinematic experience when they're reading these books, mm-hmm. is because I've really worked hard at trying to make it an experience for the reader, that it's something that will stick with them long after they read it. They may not remember my name, you know, because sometimes we read books by authors and we will remember the book, but we won't remember who wrote it at times. And so they may not remember the name Ezekiel Kincaid, but they will remember the experience that they had when they read the books or read the stories. And so I don't shy away from anything, because life does not shy away from anything with us at all. Life is full of some terrible things, and as a pastor and as a chaplain, I see it almost every day. Life is not pretty. It's messy. It's harsh. It's full of evil. It's full of fear. It's hard.
It's the hounds of hell.
Yeah, they're coming out. Hey, they might see something you don't, James. There may be something there.
Yeah, we have dogs. We have dogs. And if they ever, you know, do that thing where cats do, where they just look at something that, you know, that's really not there, and you know, I'm like, we have to move, you know, I mean, if, you know, it's funny, I talk to people who swear they have a ghost in their house, and they talk about creepy things that happen, and I would have to move. I seriously would. I couldn't do it, and maybe I'm just a big wuss, but I don't know, it terrifies me, it really does, and yeah, when you were doing the reading, man, it was good. It was giving me chills, and yeesh. But it was good. It was really good and creepy.
I do paranormal investigations as well. Professional paranormal research. Dustin DC Cameraman. I've done some investigations with him, and we've seen some stuff, you know, so that's kind of something I like to do on the side in my free time, whenever I get a chance to. But yeah, just
now you are on, you just released book 2, and you said it's a trilogy. Do you have a book 3 planned out? Have you started it?
Yeah, but it's all already done. So it's just a matter of releasing these as,
right,
you know, we, as Raventail Publishing sees fit to release them. But it's by each book gets darker. And so book three is just absolutely nightmarish.
Oh, gosh.
So
we definitely have to have you back on when book three comes out. So definitely let me know ahead of time so I can get you booked back on. But we are just about out of time for our first segment. And I should have done the whole episode with you because I'm just fascinated right now. So, yeah, I already said I had to book you back, but you have to promise to come back and see us.
Oh, absolutely. Yay. I'll let you know when the book comes out. We'll be in it. I will definitely come
definitely.
Back on.
I think next time we want a longer reading, so like maybe 3 hours,
yes.
I think, should do it.
Yeah.
And before I let you go, let us know where we can find you online.
I am on Twitter. That's kind of my main social media platform, at Ezekiel Kincaid. Instagram, I'm on there. Same thing, at Ezekiel Kincaid. My website that I just launched, my new one, is called The Paranormal Pastor. It's a Squarespace site. And you can find my stuff on Amazon. I have an Amazon author page as well. So those four places are the main places that you can find Ezekiel Kincaid and keep up with me.
Awesome. Thank you
Brilliant.
So much, Ezekiel. And for all of our listeners out there, go out and pick up the Dreadful Deaths series by Ezekiel Kincaid. And I can't wait to have you back.
All right. Much love to y'all. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you so much for joining us. We'll speak to you soon. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
Well, that time is beat again. Okay, so I'm going to go for a wee. You're going to bring out a new box of Chardonnay, and we'll be right back.
Panic Room Radio Show is brought to you by Hellbound Books Publishing, purveyors of all manner of dark fiction. You can find the publisher, along with links to all of their available works across platforms at hellboundbookspublishing.com. In the mood for something steamy to read? Check out erotica author Jennifer Lynn at jenniferlynnerotica.com. You can find James and Xtina at their respective websites, jameslongmore.com for James and darkpoetprincess.com for Xtina. Don't forget to follow The Panic Room on social media, Facebook, unofficial The Panic Room Radio Show, our Venmeo channel with all of our previous shows, the new Panic Room Radio Show, and come visit us at our website, www.panicroomradio.com.
Here comes my happiness again. And if she should tell you that she wants me back, tell her no, I gotta go.
Recycle these days. What happens next? What comes next? No idea.
I can't wait.
And, you know, I'm a lovable scamp. I really am. Anywho, I'm going to press this button because it is time that we say...
Oh, hey. Looks like it's time to review something. Oh, no.
I've forgotten which number. Why not? Oh, you know, it's all going wrong, isn't it? Samantha.
No, it's
lovely
not.
Samantha. It's the lovely Samantha. Hello?
Are you sure?
I don't know. I don't know. I pressed the wrong bloody button. Oh, you know.
Oh, there I am. There it is.
There she is.
I pressed the wrong button. Paul is having a snooze in the green room. Sorry about that, Paul. You'll be on in a bit. Samantha, welcome back at our hiatus. Welcome back with all your loveliness.
It's been a few weeks. I got nervous before I got on, and that didn't make it any better.
Right. I came upstairs a little earlier just for that reason. I'm like, we've done this for, I don't know, 6 years or something. But because we've never taken this long off before, and so it was strange. It was. I'm like, I couldn't figure out where my Skype was. I couldn't, you know, I'm like, yeah, it was weird. And, it's really been that long.
What buttons? What buttons do we
have?
And essentially, I'm sort of because it feels like it's been forever. I mean, it's only been, we missed 3 weeks, I think.
Yeah, but even before that, was kind of spotty here and there. So, we just definitely can't do this again because we miss it. We miss it when we don't have it in our life.
He thought that I stopped doing the show, I think, because I haven't did it.
Right. But we are back,
this is our problem.
It is. James was sick, I was sick, so we had absolutely no social life at all anywhere, so it was very sad. So hopefully Samantha has been partying up for us in our absence. And what do you have for us tonight, Samantha?
So I finally managed to squeeze in one of James's books amongst all of these other books that I'm reading. I was going through all
Don't
of these books the other
out.
Day on my bookshelf. I find all of these books behind the bookshelf. There's books under the couch, and I was literally realizing that I just have too much on my plate. And this is in the middle of trying to read The Erotic Odyssey of Colton Forshett. I was just like, okay, this tells me that I need to slow my roll because there were just so many. But I wanted to read something bizarro, and none of the things I was reading was bizarre at that time. They're all like normal horror people die books. So I picked it up, and the first chapter that I read, I sit there stuck on stupid is literally what happened for like 20 minutes. My face was very concerning because my husband was like, are you okay? You've been sitting there for quite a long time now. I was like, I just don't understand what happened. And so it took me a second to realize that some of the chapters are like a dream, and then some of the chapters are this other, I guess it's like the normal reality. And the book is very sticky. There's just lots of wetness in this book. Erotic, I guess, is a good place to start, but that's not – we need a better word than that. I don't know if there is one. I felt like I was reading a very messed up corner. I was not expecting this after reading Flanagan.
Oh, I like that. Messed up corner. I'm gonna write that down. I like that.
No, I mean, I was just not expecting this. And I was telling ex-Tina, I was like, James's writing style is so eclectic. Like, I'm concerned now when I pick up the next one on what it may be like.
Yes, he's like that. He
really
is.
Not what I was expecting.
He definitely is like that. And that was the first thing I read by him was Colton Forshett. And, we'd had him on the Panic Room, oddly enough, as a guest way back in the beginning. And and I was like, he comes on with this really, hot accent. And I was just like, wow, who do we have here? And then I read Colton Forshett, and I'm like, what? It did not match up at all. And it was good. It was really, really good. But I was like, what is going on here? And, that was my first bizarro at all. And I think that that has shaped all of, my other bizarro books that I've read. And I really had an appreciation for it because anything goes. Like, the one scene where he is walking and it's raining, what is raining?
That scene. Yeah. And I was laughing at it because my umbrella recently broke. So I was like, oh, I would be really screwed right now.
Oh, gosh. And then that in that scene with Elizabeth, and I think I could smell it if you
Elizabeth
know what I mean.
Elizabeth is just a disgusting character. I need to know what James is doing tonight that he wrote this book. And it's funny because it's like what Tina says, that first bizarro you read is what shapes your bizarro experience. As I'm reading this, yeah. I'm literally like, this is not Carlton Mellick writing. This is so outlandish and absurd. Like I was loving it, and then I was confused, and then I was like, why is there all of this just wetness in this book? Like, and I think because I know James, like I'll walk around the house as I'm reading it, slapping my hands with it. Like this is dirty. It's dirty, dirty. Like,
yes, it is, but in a great way.
Thank you.
Yes, in a great
way.
Like,
I'm tearing.
Oh my gosh. I finished that and I was like, that's not what I was expecting. And then I was like, man, what's that other bizarro one like on my shelf by you? And so I picked it up and I read it, and I think it's And Then You Die. And so the
oh yeah, that's
that
a pretty good one.
And I was like, I don't know if I'm prepared for that one yet. So I sat it back down. I feel like I needed time to recover from COVID.
I feel that. I do. And, you know, if you like audiobooks at all, we do have this one in audiobook, and we got an amazing narrator to read it.
Oh,
and,
no. If James isn't the one narrating it, I can't do it. I need it to be James.
Narrators in there
that I
that would be
him
fun.
To do.
but... Yeah, the narrator does bring it to life, and it's he does such a great job with it that I had a ball listening to it, and I, you know, read the book myself, and yeah, it was a different experience, and it was great, and yeah, I will forever remember that one because it was my
You know,
first,
I don't know, Tina, that just gave me a great idea. Do you know how sometimes you hook stuff up to, like, your Bluetooth in your car, specifically, like, phone calls, and when you walk past people's cars, you can hear them talking? Like, maybe we could hook it up to the Bluetooth in the car, and I could just go park somewhere and just let it narrate in, like, Wendy's parking
lot.
Oh,
gosh. Yes. I love it.
Really?
Yes, I was going to say, maybe Taco Bell, but yeah, okay.
Oh, Taco Bell would definitely be. Yeah, if you knew where I lived, that is perfect. Taco Bell is a much better, for all the crackheads, are a perfect, perfect location. Oh, yeah. That would be hilarious.
Thank you so much, Sam. I have so much fun with you, and my face is hurting from laughing. So,
James's fault. He isn't as dirty writing. I'm very concerned to pick
you
up.
You love it. You naughty, naughty girl. Love it. You really do. I know. I know. Your secret's
fault.
Out. So it is.
Yeah, I can't wait to see what you have for us next week, Sam. And have a great week. And thank you so much.
I will. Thank you, guys. See you next week.
Thank you, Sam. Bye. We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. Yay.
Oh,
well, it's always so nice, you know, to hear the praise for my books. And it, funnily enough, I say it was Tom Shawshay that started all this, literally, is how you and I met. Because I was invited on the show by the guy who published it originally. I guess I was going to have a... It was also my first book that I got published. It always have a fond spot in my heart.
Yeah.
And the funny thing was, I dreamt it. Came from the dream.
Wow.
Which probably says a lot about me, and it's also the only full-length book I've ever written without a plan.
Wow.
I just sat and I just wrote it, and it just evolved. But which is why it is just as weird as it is, because it works, but that's how it does. How it sort of evolved in my head as I wrote it. So, yeah, I'm going to have to sit and read it again. It's been a long, 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 long
time. You should.
Try not to go back and read, because I know I'll read it and my mind's going to be trying to edit it, you know, and I just need to not do that. But, yeah, I'm going to have to read Colton again. He's always going to have a warm, a moist place in my head.
You should listen to the audio.
Well.
That would be something too. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That might be even better actually. But plus, I got the name, the surname was from a friend of mine. He's actually moved to LA now. Who I did a couple of short movies with, and you know, he's a writer and that, and but that's where I got the surname from.
It's a good one.
Yeah,
I like that name. Yeah.
Steeped in history. Steeped in history it is. But I like what she's calling it, Porno Gone Mad or something. I like that. That I can do. But anywho, we do have our second guest sat waiting in the green room. So do your stuff.
Alrighty, our second guest of the evening, we have dark suspense author Paul F. Olson. Woo!
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, how you doing? Hey, thank you for joining us.
I think the demons are conspiring to keep me from hearing James tonight. His microphone keeps cutting in and out.
Sorry.
I'm only getting like every third or fourth word, James. So if you ask me a question and I don't answer it, I'm not ignoring you. I just can't hear you.
Okay.
You know, it reminds me of our beginning days. For some reason, James would be absolutely fine all during the show, and then the last 10 minutes, he would do this weird robot thing. And I was still at the time where I was very nervous if James was not there, right, you know, like all the time. So he would start the robot thing, and I wouldn't want to tell him because he would then disappear, and I would have to, like, finish the show, and it was awful. And, But we don't have that anymore, so. we have been, away for a while. Everybody was sick, and it just seems like, you know, this year kind of got away from us. And I'm so happy to – I think I actually had to cancel one of the shows that you were scheduled for, so I'm so glad that you
And
have,
I canceled the one before that, so this is our third try.
Yes, they do say third time's a charm. And I have to say, when I had to go to you and say, I'm so sorry, but I was like, oh, he canceled the first one, so I don't feel as bad. So I'm so glad that you're here. And, you're here to talk to us about your book, Alexander's Song. And tell us a little bit about it.
Well, Alexander's Song has been out now from Cemetery Dance for a couple of months. It came out in September, but the book has a much longer history than that. I originally wrote the first draft of it back in the early 90s, and at that point I had been making my living as a horror writer for close to 10 years. And I had a novel out and a bunch of stories and many articles, and I'd published my own magazine for a few years, and I'd co-edited a couple of anthologies and, you know, was doing pretty well for myself. But I sort of had the feeling it was time that I had to kick it up a notch and take things up a level. And so I started a completely different sort of book, not really sure what it was going to become. And it turned into Alexander's Song, which is a 500-page monster of a book that crosses really all genres. And when I was done, I thought, when I did the first draft, I wasn't sure what I had except 500 pages of wow. and I did another draft and kind of got everything under control, and I was pretty happy with it. And I showed it to a friend of mine, the horror writer Robert McCammon, and he liked it, and he said, "I'm going to send this to my agent." And he sent it to his agent. Well, you know, I thought that was it, man. You know, fame and fortune are coming my way tomorrow. And it didn't really turn out that way. The agent got back to me and said she liked it, but she didn't know how she could sell it. That kicked off about a year and a half or almost 2 years of me trying to sell this book. and trying to get agents or editors or anybody interested in it, and it just wasn't flying. And I kept hearing the same things. Everybody loved it. They were very complimentary about me. They were very complimentary about my writing. They were very complimentary about the story. And they said, but we don't know how to sell it. And I guess there were probably a couple of problems. One was that although I kind of had a name for myself in the horror field back then, you know, I was unknown in the wider mainstream world. I was absolutely nobody. And here I was with a big 500-page book, which would be incredibly expensive hardcover back in those days. And so that was one problem. The other problem was it crossed all these genres. And this was, you know, you got to think back if you were around back in the 80s and 90s, there was the days when they put the genre of the book right on the spine. So there was never any doubt.
Yeah.
You know, you went through B. Dalton or Walden books, and you looked at the spines of books and said horror, science fiction, fantasy, romance, right there on the spine. And that nobody could think of what one word they'd put on the spine of this book. It has the feel of a horror novel running throughout it, but it's not supernatural horror. It's definitely a story that involves a mystery, but it doesn't follow any of the conventions of the mystery genre. It's got a lot of suspense and thriller elements, but not the things that your average suspense or thriller reader goes out looking for. And it's even got some mainstream and literary elements, but it's not a mainstream literary novel either. So, you know, everybody just kept passing on this thing. And, you know, we like it. We just don't think we can sell it. We don't know what to do with it. We don't know how to market it. Sorry, we're going to pass. So eventually I gave up and I put it aside and it went into a box in the back of my closet, but I never forgot about it. And the book always stayed with me. And in 2012, I put it out myself. You know, things had changed. Now we had e-books and you could do things like that. So I self-published it as an e-book, and it's been out as an e-book ever since. And, you know, it sells a few copies every month, and that was great. And it picked up some more fans along the way, people who read it and liked it. And one of those people was Kevin Lucia, who went on to, you know, an excellent writer who just recently, you know, took over the new paperback line at Cemetery Dance. And he contacted me about a year ago and said, hey, I just became the paperback editor at Cemetery Dance, and I want to publish Alexander's Song. So after all these years, we now have Alexander's Song in a brand new paper trade paperback edition and a brand new ebook edition under the Cemetery Dance imprint. So it's been a long, long journey for this book.
I love that story. That's amazing. And I love that. And you know, what you kept hearing, you know, we just don't know what to do with it, which I think is just tells you what is going on in the business now, I think, because there are, even now, if you go to the bookstore and you pick up a book by a mainstream author, nine times out of it's just, I don't know, I'm not going to say they're awful or anything like that, but there are so many amazing books that are out in the indie book world, and you know, for the most part, nobody knows about them, nobody sees them, because you know, they're just spitting out the same things all the time that are, you know, one of the authors I used to read 20 years ago is still putting out the same series 40-some books later. And I'm like, really? 40? I mean, congratulations, but you know, 40 books? Aren't you tired of that? You know what I mean? Don't you have anything else in you? And, you know, if they would just, you know, people just look more at the indie or take a chance. I think they would be so surprised at what's out there.
I ran into that back then. My first novel was a vampire novel. And I guess in keeping with your talk with Ezekiel earlier, it took place within a church, vampires in a church. Back then in the 80s, you know, the big thing was televangelists, Jim Baker and Jimmy Swaggart and all of those people on TV. Every time you turned on, you'd find five televangelists preaching away.
Oh, yeah.
And so I set up, I created this fictitious worldwide religious movement with televangelists who are vampires. And so that was great. But after that, everybody, well, why don't you do another vampire book? You know, do another vampire book. And it's like, I don't
right.
want to do another vampire book.
I definitely want to hear more of Alexander's song. I think you had an excerpt to read for us.
I do. I have a short one. It's. I'll give you a little bit of background on the book. Way back in the 1940s, there was a guy named Alexander Bassett who was this hugely successful writer, novels, short stories, poems, even, and at one point had a hit Broadway play. He was a liberal, a socialist. A lot of his books dealt with the fight for social justice. And he was incredibly popular. He was one of the great American writers of his time. But as the years went by, his heavy drinking and his increasingly, I guess, erratic behavior caused his work to suffer and his reputation to slip. Then he ran into trouble with Senator McCarthy and the House Un-American Activities Committee in the 50s, and he never really recovered after that. And he died in 1969 in a car crash, and by the time he died, he was largely forgotten. Years later, a young sort of failed school teacher decides to write a series of articles about Bassett's life. He wants to kind of bring the man's work back to prominence and get more people to know about him and also answer some of the questions about his mysterious life. So he starts out by going to the small town of Rock Creek, Michigan, which is where Bassett grew up, and he wants to learn about his childhood and what Bassett was like as a young man. And right from the start, he runs into a brick wall. Most of the people in Rock Creek this time don't even know who Bassett was anymore. They don't even know the name. Some folks barely remember him, and they tend to write him off. Oh, that guy, he was the commie hack. You know, we're not interested in talking about him. And their school teacher, Andy Gillespie, is just getting more and more frustrated going around town and running into brick walls everywhere he goes and being rebuffed at every turn. And he's frustrated, and he's thinking about throwing in the towel. And one night, after a really particularly frustrating day of looking for answers and not finding any, he falls asleep, and he has a dream. He awoke in the middle of the night and found himself in another world. Or more precisely, he found himself in two worlds simultaneously. He could see the dim shapes of the furniture in his room, outlines of the dresser and nightstand and desk that had become familiar to him. He could see a dark shadow with a brighter center, the mirror on the wall across from the bed. The other world, though he was still not sure he could accurately call it that, seemed to exist side by side with this first one. No, not side by side, he thought, but superimposed, virtually on top of it. It only showed itself in one or two places where the edges did not quite meet properly, as though the dresser top had five corners instead of four, as though there was a third drape overlapping the two now pulled across the window. This second world manifested itself more as a feeling than as something he could actually see. As he sat up in bed and rubbed sleep from his eyes with one stiff hand, he believed quite strongly that he could hear sounds and smell scents without truly hearing or smelling anything. He was aware of the second world's vibrations as a slight pulsing that reached him in a place below his skin, tingling through his bone marrow. Instinctively, his hand found the light switch on the wall. He wasn't surprised at all to see his ex-wife standing beside the desk. "Hello, Joanne." Her head swiveled lazily in his direction, and her gaze flicked across him with the ultimate disinterest. "I thought you were in..." She raised a hand to silence him. The gesture was languid, as though she were a corpse floating just below the surface of a cold lake. Her hair seemed to be floating, too, the dark strands that normally fell several inches below her shoulders now drifting around the base of her neck. Joe, she turned slowly away, faced the window, and went to her knees. She pulled the drapes open and peered down into the darkness of Max Turner's backyard. The sensation of being in two different worlds seemed to strengthen, and Andy wondered if it was a coincidence or if her turning away from him had something to do with it. He was confused, torn between sitting silently in bed, saying something more to her, or perhaps even getting up and going to her side. He tried to imagine what she was seeing through the window, but with the low cloud cover of the night, he doubted it was much. One or two phantom trees and the barest outline of the backyard storage shed, perhaps. The door swung open then, and he turned to see Alexander Bassett come striding into the room. Like the sight of Joanne, this appearance caused him no surprise. With a second world laid over the top of the real one, Andy supposed that things like this were common and ordinary. When he glanced quickly back at his ex-wife, he saw that she was gone. The drapes were back in their proper position. Bassett didn't look like any of his numerous photographs, many of which Andy had photocopied over the years and which were now tucked neatly into his research notebooks. He had the sensation of looking at several Bassetts, a young one and an old one, a happy and sad one, a strong one, a weak one, a light one and a dark, all melded into one human being. "I came here to thank you," Bassett said. His voice was not soft and cultured, but flat and harsh. Andy had an unkind image of two jagged stones grinding together in the man's throat. "It's a nice thing you're trying to do for me, create an Alexander Bassett history. No one's ever done that." "Oh, there have been critical studies galore. I'm sure you've read most of them. But nobody's ever attempted to draw a complete, conclusive picture of me as a man, a real human being." Andy nodded wordlessly, thinking, where the hell is Ginny now? She wouldn't want to miss this adventure. "I have to tell you something," Bassett said. "Your objective is noble, but you're going about it all the wrong way. You're looking in the wrong places, at the wrong things." "But Rock Creek, oh no, there's nothing wrong with looking here in Rock Creek. It's the things you're looking at. That's the problem." "But I did everything I could think of. The library, the senior citizens. It's a small town. I didn't know where else to turn." "You should have gone straight to the horse's mouth. Come." Bassett reached out and took Andy's hand. His touch was cool and dry, and for the first time, Andy felt fear. It entered his chest like a small, sharp blade being slipped neatly between his ribs. Something undeniable lay in his throat, not moving, making it hard for him to breathe. He shrank away from Bassett, but found himself propelled forward nonetheless, out of bed, across the room, out into the third-floor hallway. "My clothes," he began, but the words died in his throat when he saw that he was already dressed. The bed and breakfast was quiet, dark. They went downstairs that felt soft and unstable underfoot and passed through the shadowy living room, heading for the front door. They were almost there when the furnace in the basement kicked on with a terrific woof, and Andy's suddenly glassy nerves almost shattered. He had to bite back a ragged scream that would have awakened the dead.
I'm sorry. I'm going to have to stop you. I'm terribly sorry. We're going to run out of time. And
That's okay. That was a good place to stop.
I know. I wanted to hear more. You're doing a great job reading, and this is really good. I'm like, how much longer is there? And I'm like, I'm going to read the rest of it. So, again, you know, when you make out the signed copy, that's X-T-I-N-A.
Yeah. You got it.
Oh, my gosh. I was, you know, it reminds me of Stephen King. It really does. I think, what was the one? It's got a white cover. I think his name was Mike. He's a, I don't know. I can't remember.
Bag of Bones?
The one that just, yes.
That's what I was thinking of.
I loved that book. I did. So, yeah, I was definitely having vibes like that, and I love it. So, I'm so glad we could get you on the show because, like, you know, I think I had to reschedule you, and I'm just so happy that you just, you know, agreed to come back. We've had such a great night tonight, and you have to promise to come back.
I will, definitely, anytime.
Yay! And I think we're almost out of time, aren't we, James? I was going to say, let us know where we can find you online.
Okay, well, I'm on Facebook under Paul F. Olson. I'm P.F. Olson just about everywhere else in social media, Instagram and Twitter. And my website is paulfolson.com. And you can find my books, hopefully, on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and independent bookstores. They can be ordered from Ingram. So just about anywhere you look, if you look a little bit, you should be able to dig me up.
I have to say, when you first came on the show and you were talking about B. Dalton and Walden Books, I was like, oh, my gosh, I remember those stores. Oh, I would head right. Yeah, when I was younger, they didn't have a whole lot in way of, like, younger horror. They just had, you know, Stephen King and stuff like that. So, it sure brought me back, though. And,
I used to manage for B. Dalton, so I was a store manager
nice.
For them. So
nice. This has been such a great night. I thank you so much for coming on the show. And for all of our listeners out there, go out and get Alexander's Song by Paul F. Olson. And I can't wait to have you back. Thank you so much for coming on.
Great, and thanks for having me. Thanks, James.
Hey, thank you. Thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Yay. Good night. It was such a great show.
Yeah,
time
has been. I need a new microphone. I might have a Christmas present to myself. In the meantime, it is time to say goodnight, Xena.
Good night, Xena.
Good night.
Pretend you're happy when you're blue. It isn't very hard to do. And you will find happiness without an end if you pretend. Remember, anyone can dream, and nothing's bad as it may seem. The little things you haven't got could be a lot if you pretend. You'll find a love you can share, one you can call your own. Just close your eyes, you'll be there. You'll never be alone. And if you sing this melody, you'll be pretending just like me. The world is mine, it can be yours, my friend. So why don't you pretend? Like me.